you know, I have some friends that once told me, I tried to convince them that they're, you know, concerning flying saucers and concerning anti-gravity and concerning some of the technologies that most definitely already exist, but they don't exist in the public sector. And their response to me was, well, if it's not in the Bible, I don't believe in it. In other words, the Bible doesn't talk about anti-gravity. The Bible doesn't talk about, you know, bases on the moon or on Mars or whatever. And so I don't believe in it. And that's sort of the take that a lot of people, that a lot of Christians, the position that a lot of Christians assume, whether consciously or unconsciously. Well, I can't find a scripture that, that has anything to do with UFOs. Therefore, I will determine by some form of logic that therefore UFOs are irrelevant to my biblical view. Which is obviously a flawed way of looking at things, because first of all, the Bible is eerily specific concerning certain details, certain prophecies. If you go through the Old Testament, especially, you'll find certain prophecies where, especially in the book of Daniel, that the very date, the very occurrence and date were predicted hundreds of years in advance. For certain things. And so the Bible in some ways is exceptionally specific. But then in other ways, the Bible is amorphous. The Bible alludes to things, but without giving us many details. It's like seeing through a glass dimly, like somebody in the New Testament says, concerning prophecy. So when it comes to a lot of the actual stuff, actual technologies that we're seeing coming to fruition, it's not necessarily that those technologies themselves are prophesied, but it's the end result. It's the end game that's prophesied that those technologies are culminating towards. In other words, for example, I can't find a single verse in the Bible that ever alluded to the fact that you and I would be driving automobiles or flying in airplanes. But we can cite the verse that says that knowledge will increase. Men will go to and fro upon the earth. And one could extrapolate that that is an indirect reference to the fact that we would have the internet, we would have digital books, that we would have the capability to get into an aircraft, a jet aircraft, and fly to the other side of the earth, you know, in a 24-hour period. We can extrapolate that, and we may in fact be correct about the meaning of that about a potential meaning of that prophecy based on our extrapolation of the technology that we currently are utilizing. So that's the way people have to look at prophecy, some prophecy, a lot of prophecy actually, concerning the times that are coming in the future, and perhaps some things that are occurring now, and probably things that have already occurred. It's the end game that we have to understand, and the end game is explicitly clear in the Bible. The Bible is very clear, whereas it's not very clear sometimes about specific prophetic things. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. It is explicitly clear about the story, about the narrative, about how this thing began and where and how it's going to end. We know that for sure. For example, we know for sure, according to scripture, that the devil is doomed. I mean, period. He's doomed. We know that. We don't have to speculate. We don't have to extrapolate. He is screwed. He's destined to be thrown into the lake of fire. He's also destined to be released for 1,000 years afterwards and then thrown back into the lake of fire. Actually, I believe the first time he's not sure if he's thrown in the lake of fire the first time or if that's just ultimately. But anyway, the point is that is something where we don't need to extrapolate on. We don't need to extrapolate on the destiny, the doom of the devil. It is written in stone. It is a surety. I don't believe he believes that, but for those of us who put our faith in the scriptures, we know that that is a surety. We know that the King of Kings and Lord of Lords wins, that he ultimately returns and occupies the seat of David that was promised to him. We know that by faith in the scriptures. We know that to be a certainty. So we know what the end game is. As a believer, if you believe in the Bible, then you know what the end game is. So if you have the information about where this is all headed, then it isn't difficult to then start to have an understanding of how all these pieces and parts fit together according to the end game. Part of the secret of unraveling, of understanding what it is that the devil actually wants, what is his prime objective, I believe is hidden within the second chapter of Psalms, in Psalm 2. And I end my analysis on it because I believe it directly relates to CERN and correlates with CERN. Because according to Psalm 2, and we know, by the way, that the Psalms are prophecies because Jesus refers to them as prophecy, and so do the apostles, directly quoting from the Psalms as prophecy. So Psalm 2 paints a picture of the nations that are involved in the kings of the earth are involved in a conspiracy against the Lord, but also against his anointed, capital A, his anointed, Jesus. And the beginning of Psalm 2 says, "Why do the nations rage and the people plot a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together," or plot together, "against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us." Now that phrase, "let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us," I found an interesting correlation to the activities at CERN. Because what CERN is actually doing, laying aside all of the conspiratorial stuff, laying aside all of the speculative stuff, what CERN is actually, and I don't know if people caught this in my video, it was kind of inferred and hidden in a way, but what I was trying to do was to show people that that verse may be directly referring to what the human race is actively doing right now, which is we are trying to literally break the bonds of the material world. Literally. That isn't conspiratorial. That isn't speculative. That is precisely why we are accelerating precisely why we are accelerating protons to almost the speed of light and then smashing them into each other. The reason why we have to do that is because that's the only way that we know how to break them apart. We have to, it's actually quite a primitive idea incorporated into the most complex machine that we know of. Very primitive idea, smash things, but with this incredibly complex technology behind it. We're smashing the protons together in order to break the bonds that hold the subatomic world together. That's exactly what we're doing. And casting away the cords that make the physical world what it is. And that is a very simplistic, but yet a very realistic way of describing what CERN is doing. They're smashing protons together in order to break them apart. And their stated goal is to understand what it is that holds them together in the first place. So that isn't speculative, and that may be directly prophesied in Psalm 2. Let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us, referring to the kings of the earth who are plotting against who? The Lord and his anointed. So we have a couple of things in here that we can understand just in the first couple of verses of Psalm 2. The rulers are taking counsel together. In other words, they are conspiring. In fact, that's what some of the versions Some of the translations say the rulers of the earth or the kings of the earth are conspiring together against the Lord. In other words, against the Father and against his son, Jesus, the anointed one. And why are they conferring together against the Lord? First of all, it's interesting to note in Psalm 2 that they know who he is. This isn't a bunch of atheists trying to figure out something about the Big Bang. This is a conspiracy involving the rulers who know who the Lord is, and furthermore, who his anointed is. In other words, they know who the Father is, and they know who the Son is. And they know that the Son has a promised empire, if you will, a promised kingdom on the earth, that he will occupy a throne, and they don't like that idea at all. They want to enthrone somebody else. They do not like the Lord or his anointed, and in fact are conspiring to make war with him. And so if we extrapolate this idea out and we read the next verses, which are, let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us, and we add in what's happening at CERN, suddenly the big picture starts to come into view, according to Psalm 2, in my opinion. Is that what we have, the grand conspiracy, ultimately, is to figure out a way to make war with God. Now, that's ludicrous, right? That's absolutely ludicrous. It's even asinine, right? According to a lot of the commenters that you find on YouTube and on the internet. It's completely asinine to even conceive of such a thing. Well, I'm glad they agree with God's opinion of the whole idea, because the next verses say, he who sits in the heavens shall laugh. God is laughing at this idea, this notion. The Lord shall hold them in derision. In other words, he's not real, he's laughing, and he's not very happy about this idea that they have. Then he shall speak to them in his wrath and distress them in his deep displeasure. And this is the statement that the Lord makes. This is the Lord making a statement about this plot, this conspiracy, that the rulers of the earth are conspiring against the Lord and his anointed. This is the Father's response, okay? And this tells us, his response gives us a clue about exactly what they're conspiring, because here comes his response. Yet have I set my king on my holy hill of Zion. So the Father is laughing at their conspiracy, and his response to them is, I have my king. He is going to sit on my holy hill, and there's nothing that you can do to change that fact. So what are the kings of the earth conspiring against the Lord and against his anointed? To usurp the throne of the anointed king, Jesus, the King of kings and the Lord of lords, who is coming to occupy a throne. Again, we know that that is true if we believe in the Bible, because the end of the story, at the very end of the Bible, in the book of Revelations and in the last chapters of the book of Revelations, Jesus is sitting on the throne, and he is ruling over the earth, and he is dashing the nations to pieces with a rod of iron, and dashing them like pottery. And that's the end game. And then after that, of course, the new heavens and the new earth, and the new Jerusalem descends from heaven. And the most astounding, I believe the most astounding statement in the scriptures is made, now the habitation of God is with men. Close the book, end of story, game over. So we know where it's going. And the Bible gives us clues about this conspiracy that is afoot and that is going to be launched and hatched in the coming days, and I believe is already underway, to dethrone Jesus, to usurp. Dethrone isn't the best word, because Jesus hasn't occupied the throne of David yet. It's been promised to him, but he has not yet occupied it. That is a prophecy that has yet to be fulfilled. So they're hoping to usurp, is the word, usurp that throne, usurp the governance of the earth. That's the conspiracy. And they want to make war on God to do it. They believe the controllers, the Luciferian elite, They believe that the technologies that are coming out, that they're exploring and developing, not just in CERN, but in the underground bases, and I would suggest off planet, that they are developing the weapons with which to make war on God, to make war with enemies that are not even human. And number one, they're hoping to develop the technology to do that, to actually make war with God. But number two, they're hoping, and this is the second part of the grand conspiracy, they're hoping to unlock the entities, unchain the entities that are capable of leading them in such a war with God. And obviously, the devil plays a role in that too, perhaps the primary role. But there are other entities that they're interested in unleashing to guide them, to lead them in a war against God. So to close this monologue out here, what do we have? What is the grand conspiracy summed up in Psalm 2? It's summed up in a question I used to ask my friends all the time. What kind of weapons do the rulers of the earth bring to a war with God? What kind of weapons? Well, the kind of weapons that might be under development right now because of quantum physics, because of quantum mechanics, because of CERN, because of the potential to open the gates, to bring back the gods from the golden age that will lead us in an epic war against God, not lead us, but lead them in an epic war against God. They believe they have the technology, and they believe that they have the leadership, the entities that are capable of leading them in this war. That's these things combined are giving them the confidence. And to me, that's the final end game of what they're hoping to accomplish with CERN.